it's really about who can sort of minimize the mistakes and make the least amount of mistakes and just sail a really smart series.
For the best Olympics coverage, subscribe to the OTB Highlights podcast feed on the OTB Sports app now.
We all talk about what might happen and our hopes and dreams for the day, but that's not real life.
Dadcast, Tuesdays from 3 p.m. on OTB Sports Radio. Tune in on the OTB Sports app.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.
You're welcome back. Now, former Galway manager Kevin Walsh is with us for a bit of a considered take on the weekend's football. He's also the man behind growcoach.ie, an online coaching platform for GAA coaches and players at all levels. Kevin, how are you getting on?
Morning, guys. How are you doing?
Good. Now, Grow Coach, talk to us about this.
I suppose it's a kind of a coaching platform that maybe looks a bit deeper into, because the skills that mightn't be that much seen. So when you have your review of the brilliant goal or the brilliant pint or the brilliant bit of defence, sometimes we can overlook the parts that probably cause this. So it's just looking a bit deeper into things that can give teams a better chance of winning and individuals a better chance of improving.
So rather than just focusing on the big incidences or the big moments in a game, it's more looking for underlying trends?
Yeah, our underlying, we'll say, for instance, even, you know, missed tackles or rushing in or slipping, like there's a skill to actually stopping. And we all say, well, hard luck on that tackle there. And once the missed tackle comes, the whole pitch opens up. So can we stop that kind of stuff by getting our footwork right? Same as in attack, can we get the runners coming in the right areas rather than running everywhere and wasting energy? So it's just little bits and pieces like that. Like, I'm sure when the missed tackle happens, we all talk about the great point, or great score, or great move. We don't maybe go deep enough to say what caused it.
How high is a missed tackle count on average in a championship game, say for instance on Sunday?
Look, it's quite high, and but it's, you know, we have to be careful. Like, a lot of teams will go out to count tackles to show how intense the team is. Other teams won't, and I suppose if we go counting missed tackles, your team might be sending off too much. So it's to find that balance where someone can stop in the right area. So, like, even if you look at Paul Conroy's second pint on Sunday there in 7 minutes, you see where Aidan O'Shea rushes over and completely misses him, lunges him, and at least leaves him in a simple tap over with the left foot. Where if that was a, what do we call, a close out from Grow Coach, that you can stop in an area where he stops the passing lanes and also stop the shooting lane and also maybe just turn the guy backwards while waiting for help.
So what would you be telling Aidan O'Shea then in your Monday morning review?
To be fair to Aidan O'Shea, I've just picked that instance out, so I don't want to say that Aidan's doing this all the time. He's not. But again, if you look at that, it's you know, where Galway scored 2-8. That's one of the points. So that's 1/8 of the points by a simple incident like that. So it's just important that like, in particular when the game is gone, with all the bodies coming at you, if you can hold up the play for 2 to 3 seconds, it just gives you your help defence beside you.
There's a couple of themes you wanted to touch on from that Connacht final on Sunday, Kevin. The first thing is the role of the sweeper. What are you looking for here when you're judging the effectiveness of a sweeper in a game?
Look at it, you're judging what area you're marking and what skills they've got in that area. So, like, you know, you can go back at the Mon and Armagh match and you'll see towards the end where Armagh got a vital goal and you'll see Hughes being a sweeper there where he's in the right area, but he just leaps off the ground and there's a man around him. So it's the footwork that's required in that area in the end of the situation. So, for instance, even on Sunday, you'll see where we've got bodies back, but I'm not for sure if you have a defined role. So if you look at, we say, when the ball is more than one kick away, that's the language we use, the ball can only potentially land in space in front. So I would ask the sweeper to mark space at that point. But when it comes within one kick away of the full forward, that sweeper should be moving straight back to double team, in particular the likes of Aidan O'Shea, who would be a very, very strong full forward. You know, and that's where the penalty came from. You'll see that Aidan O'Shea was left alone. The sweeper was in no man's land. It was popped off the top. Aidan O'Shea won it, and the runners came off the shoulder. So it's just the understanding of the tools you must give to a sweeper and not to have too many sweepers at the same time.
So one kick away, I presume, you're talking Are you talking inside your own half? Is that what you're judging?
Yeah, I'm talking about where a ball can potentially land. Mm. So we all know the ball is not going to go 80 yards. The chance it might go 60.
Yeah.
So you mark the space in front where the ball can potentially land.
So you want to see your sweeper basically drop back in front of the full forward when the ball is in and around the 45-metre line. Would you go that far, Kevin? Is it that black and white?
Exactly. And again, in particular, it's depending on the guy that's at full forward. So if you have a really speedster in full forward and the ball is only 45 metres away, you can afford to mark him slightly in front, taking his space he wants to run into, because the high ball is not going to kill you. Well, but if you have the likes of Anthony O'Shea, who's very strong, who will normally beat his eye 1v1, your sweeper needs to be sitting back there. The minute he catches that ball, he's got to be on top.
Who would be the standout sweepers at the moment, Kevin, in the country? Because Keane O'Sullivan was obviously that guy for so long.
Keane O'Sullivan was really, really good. If you look at Liam Sick, Johnny Heaney for ourselves in our time would have been strong at it. I suppose the biggest thing we've got to be careful with is and that we don't just go with one sweeper all the time. I think that on the go-kart side of it, we would always try and have an alternating sweeper, because sometimes the team will push a guy up on a sweeper and you're inviting the team, whereas you have two or three different people at different times, very hard for the team to figure that out.
Kevin, I'm curious as well, just to listen to Paul Joyce's comments after the match, talking about how Galway's shooting in Croke Park, your shooting in Croke Park needs to be better than it was at the weekend. Is that something that kind of strikes home in the stats as well? I know Mayo have played, I think someone said in Croke Park, 37 times in the last 10 years. Galway have only played there 10 times in the last 10 years. Are the shooting stats kind of stranger in Croke Park in your mind as a coach? People often talk about the backdrop and how maybe the goal seems a little bit closer than it is. Is there something in that maybe some teams are more used to a pitch like Croke Park than other teams?
Yeah, I definitely think there is. I have it in my book as well. I've a team that plays on a home venue more regular has a start on other teams. There's no doubt about that. And in particular, Croke Park, because it's like a Coliseum compared to other stadiums. You go to Killarney, you go to Pier Stadium, up to Down. It hasn't got that big hill. It hasn't got where the goalpost gets lost in there. So the Croke Park is a massive issue. And the Dubs are there quite a bit. The Mayo team in the past would have been there quite a bit. But to be fair to this new Mayo team, they're not used to it either. So that would be very, very good for them going forward, because a lot of those Mayo guys needed a chance to play in Croke Park.
Would you like to see the likes of Dublin come out of Croke Park a little bit more often? I know we had the Donegal bringing it up a couple of years ago, that even in the Super 8s, Dublin should have the game or two outside of Croke Park. Are you along similar lines, or do you think, if you're going to beat them, you're going to have to beat them in Croke Park anyway?
Well, it looks like you're going to beat them in Croke Park anyway, and I have no problem with that on a final day because of the tradition of GAA. But I don't see any reason why Dublin aren't out of Croke Park for every single game by the final. They played Meath last week. If that was a Navan, would they have a different result? Maybe we would. Was there a huge crowd in it? Did they need to be in Croke Park? I don't think so. And again, as I said, I've stated this in the book as well, if you look at the odds that the actuaries put up, and there's different odds for being home and away, in particular in Croke Park, and there's a reason for that. And that means that there's certainly some kind of an advantage to a team who's used to playing in the pitch like that.
Can I just ask you as well, you mentioned the book, I remember, and correct me if I'm wrong, you talking in the book about it being not necessarily a 70-minute game, but more like a 78, 79-minute game, and even in club, a 68, 69-minute game, that often players and managers don't take into account in their preparations or in their mindset or psychology, the fact that this isn't, that injury time and added time is quite significant in GAA nowadays. And when you look at different times as well in the game, like that third quarter, for example, on Sunday, when Mayo outscored Galway by 1-4 to no points, do you think some teams are maybe at accused of sometimes forgetting about a period in the game, or kind of slacking off for a period in the game, when, as you say in the book, you need to be on form for every single minute, and not just for 70, but for 78, 79?
Yeah, and look at it. 79-1 in the book I suppose it's really driving home the fact that a player is only on the ball for a maximum of 1 minute. And when you break it down, and he's done well. So what's your impact for the 79 minutes? And it has to be concentration levels. It has to be using your body. It has to be the stuff like the sweeper I'm talking about. And if you can get everybody in that frame of mind and holding concentration, you're in a great place. We use a phrase, run 5 to save 50. And that really means run the first 5 yards early. You may save yourself a 50-yard run. And, you know, the amount of stuff that you're stopping happening is crucial. You know, even if you look at the ball off the post the last day, you had 4 Mayo guys standing up. Shane Welch happened to be jogging in, and he was the first to see it react to the back of the net. That goal could potentially put you out of the championship. So the concentration levels there, the run 5 to say 50, was very low. So I'm sure Mayo learned from that. But the 79-1 really means, how can I impact the game when I'm off the ball?
To that phrase there, run 5 to say 50, is an interesting one. It's a great outcome if you can make it happen, Kevin, but I presume teaching that skill to be able to recognise what those 5 yards are or when to run those 5 yards is an extremely hard thing to coach into somebody.
It is, to a degree, but I suppose that run 5 to say 50 is actually concentration, right, as much as anything else. Of course, the other side of it is knowing where to be takes a skill, but you can still help and coach that to a degree. But some people will always be better at it. But like, if the concentration levels are high, and it's the language you use, if you can say to players, you'll run the first 5, you're going to save yourself and your teammates a 50-yard run over the field. Now, that can bring your GPS down, but it doesn't mean that you're not playing any worse. And that's why you don't really go over the GPS figures too often, because, you know, some teams can be running headless after they make massive mistakes.
Are teams very obsessed with their GPS stats at the moment?
I think they can be. It's hard for me to say what exactly goes on inside management teams, but I know in the past few years people were just obsessed with GPS numbers. And I suppose what we say in Grow Coach too is less is more at times. And all the information you have, if you take too much of it in, what do you go after? What's the most important rock to move? So I suppose, I think you're right. GPS can be used a bit too much at times at the detriment of the team.
When you're looking around at this Galway team at the moment, are you confident that there is going to be a kick next year? Do you think that they're on the right path?
Look, this team, it's a very young team. An awful young players came through at the same time. You know, you're looking at Paul Conroy, Shane Walsh, Damien Comer, all had huge impacts in the game the last time, in particular in the first half, but seemed to go out in the second half. So, you know, it depends on how many young leaders come through. And if you bring an awful gang of young fellas, if there's not leaders amongst them, we don't know that yet, and other leaders are gone, I suppose that question is yet to be answered. Mm. But there seems to be a lot of movement very quickly.
A lack of consistency in the squad and maybe too much turnover?
Well, there's a good bit of turnover. As I said to you, maybe next year will show us who can lead and can't lead. Mm. But there's a massive amount of new bodies, I suppose, to play to a system where if you're introducing 2 or 3 years at a time, you kind of, a more simpler turnover.
Sure. It's interesting, Kevin, sometimes you can, I'm not sure, maybe it's just from watching more games in Croke Park and maybe there's a possibility of getting a better seat, but it seems that patterns of play are more obvious in Croke Park than in most other grounds around the country, that you can see a well-coached team and you can see a not-so-well-coached team quite much more easily in Croke Park than other places. So are you seeing a more advanced, maybe not a level of coaching, but maybe a more advanced tactical approach from Mayo at the moment compared to Galway? So if you leave all the talent aside for one moment, are they operating at a higher level when it comes to their coaching?
Well, if you look at Sunday, I suppose the two things that stick out for me, and we knowing that Mayo are a running team who love to run with numbers and always have been in that. You know, in the road course thing, we deal with the 5 lanes in attack. We break the pitch down to 5 lanes. And, you know, in attack, we should be all hitting the 5 lanes, full width of the pitch. But it's just in the defensive side of it, 3 lanes is actually enough to mark when the teams can match. In particular, when it's a Mayo team that are runners and love to run through the middle. They really struggle down lane 1, lane 5, hadn't over the years. And it just, on Sunday's game, they got 2 for 2 goals. They missed 3 other goals. And their point shooting was all from inside, from the arc. it wasn't that they were hitting shots from 55, 60 and stuff. So that for me would be something that, you know, would certainly need to be fixed a bit more for our group of players. You know, if you look at the twice there, Durand goal, Conroy's point, there's five goalie bodies around those two guys and they sold it through it. So is it a case of, like you spoke earlier about the one sweeper, having four or five bodies in an area, do they know their jobs? Is it that they think that someone beside them is going to take up the mantle and all of a sudden no one takes it up? That we've got to be really careful with how many bodies are being back, and when you're back, that they have a role, a defined role. Because sometimes, you know, you leave the job the guy beside you, or you won't move in time because your concentration level goes down. So that's just something that probably was. And the other thing was the kick out. Mm. I just felt the Galway were very easy to read. I didn't see a massive amount of different areas that could have kicked the ball. In particular, when you know Mayo always push up on a kick out. Different if your team lays off, you're going to get your short kick outs. So I think Galway behaved poorly in the kick out stakes in the second half, and that's probably something needs to improve as well.
It's just predictability, Kevin, is it? Is it just it may almost seem that they knew what the goalkeeper was going to do and what the routine was going to be?
Yeah, to a degree. I suppose you're always going to analyse other teams and whatever they do the two or three games before is more than likely what they're going to be at. But I suppose it's not just about a goalkeeper, it's about all the outfield players having a role of where to move, where not to move, where to stand, the pocket you're trying to develop. You know, do you go in a line? Is there screening going on? All that type of stuff to make space. But I just didn't see that in the second half with Galway. It's something that, you know, the lanes, number one, and the kick-off strategy is huge.
When you look at the overall picture then, Kevin, are you seeing a Mayo team coming through Connacht who are better placed to try and take on Dublin this year than they were at any point over the last 10 years, or are they still a few steps behind where they were at their peak?
I think they're still a few steps behind where they were at the peak. I just don't think they're going to replace Higgins, Barrett, Boyle, Keenan O'Connor, you know, all those players straight away. I think these young fellas will take a little bit of time. I suppose the only thing I would say where they're definitely better placed is the fact I think Dublin have come back to pack. So, you know, Dublin missing the likes of McCaffrey, Mannion, you know, all the bodies that are kind of gone, McGawley, those guys. I'm not so sure Dublin have replaced all their lads. So, you know, I just think the pack is getting tighter. Whether Mayo are up to that yet or not, I'm just not so sure. I know when the McLaughlins came on Sunday, you know, they had a massive impact on that game. And, you know, Kevin McLaughlin, for me, is probably one of Mayo's best players. That doesn't get the credit. He does the simple stuff right. His tackling is brilliant. His visual awareness is brilliant. His passing is brilliant. You know, he always kicks a point or two. And he's always in the right place. But, you know, when he wasn't on the pitch that day, and when they didn't have the other leaders, I thought Mayo struggled a bit when things got stale. So I'm just not so sure where they're at in relation to Dublin minutes.
It strikes me, Kevin, when you're talking as well, like we're talking about stats and facts and GPSs and just how almost professional the GAA has become in the last number of years, the last couple of decades, or decade especially. And you see the number of TV cameras around Croke Park, and Pádraig Joyce was referencing the Shane Walsh incident when he was dragged down by one of the Mayo players during that game at the weekend. And he had scored 1-1. He was really dangerous. Of course, he's Galway's target man. And then had to get a pain-killing injection in his shoulder at half-time. And, you know, one of the cameras picked it up. And Joyce, poor Joyce, was talking afterwards and says, look, I'd seen it happen. There's two linesmen, there's four umpires, there's a referee and there's an assistant referee. Like, as someone who is a, you know, former inter-county manager, does it surprise you that incidents like this, especially in a stadium like Croke Park, go seemingly relatively unnoticed?
I've made no secret of this in the book. I've hit it very strongly. It's time and past time the GAA review referees. And if the referees isn't up to standard, you know, move somebody else in there. Like, this cannot be a case of, this is my Sunday, the linesman, you have it next Sunday. There's people there with flags. All they have to do is wave one way or the other. They're referees. They're supposed to be high standard referees. For me, they should have the exact same power as the guy in the middle. And, you know, we should have five or six referees in this if you have them around the pitch. because it doesn't make sense. You know, the same thing will happen with Shane Walsh in our own final 2019. But, you know, the linesmen are taking a backseat here, but maybe they're told to that. But like, the GAA has to move on. And it's not just about fouling, it's about everything else. It could be a point, there shouldn't be a point. It could be, there's loads of stuff. They have to have an impact. They cannot be just there to wave a flag. And that's what it seems to me. So I don't blame Porrick for his comments on that. But it's happening every day. It's not a once-off incident.
Like, another thing, like you spoke about the book, was I guess, the air around GAA punditry at the moment. And like, this is someone I spoke to different people around, even in soccer with the European Championships, the level of punditry. And there's quite a high level of punditry. You see the likes of Roy Keane and Alex Scott, you know, really, really good pundits, and someone you turn up the TV for at halftime. Like, generally speaking, in the GAA, and I know you referenced GAA punditry in your book as well, do you think GAA punditry has improved? Has it receded a bit? Like, even the use of stats and the things we're talking about here this morning, there doesn't seem to be much of that in modern punditry in the GAA. Would you agree, or where do you sit on the current state of GAA punditry?
Yeah, look, I totally agree. I think that technology has massively improved, so that has moved on. But I mean, the same phrases are still there. You know, it's kind of a phrase of the transition from defence to attack. And it's all the same phrases, but it's just nothing to back it up. And look, I would love to see the analysis being done deeply. The little bits I've been talking about earlier on. You know, and even if you look at someone telling us, well, this team scored 898 in the league and conceded 448, whatever you want to say, what's actually causing that? Why is the team defensively better? Why is the team offensively better? Get into the nuts and bolts of what's doing it so that people can understand the game where it's moved on to. So for me, it's you know, there's two things here. Someone will tune in to watch the punditry because there'll be something funny said. Or others might, they just probably, I know people have turned off the vision because they're not listening to a lot of us. So I think for the supporters and for everybody else that aren't inside the county dressing rooms, it'd be no harm if you had people that could bring out that type of knowledge out to the public so that maybe they can look for a different part of the game and say, oh yeah, I see what's happening here. For instance, you know, if I were to go back over the stuff we had done, there was a certain type of kick-out we had, and the more we lost that kick-out, the better return we got. So we know that over a period of time, where others might be saying, well, I've won 9 kick-outs out of 13. Well, actually, the fact that 4 I lost, if I'm set up right, I could get a better out of them. So that's the kind of how deep it needs to go to if you really want to get the extension.
All right, Kevin, good stuff. Growcoach.ie is where you can go to find out any more information about what Kevin was talking about there. Kevin, great stuff. Thanks many for taking the call.
Thank you, Richard.
Cheers. Kevin Walsh there, former Galway manager, and as I say, Growcoach.ie, an online coaching platform for GAA coaches and players at all levels, is where you can go to get more information on all of that and explain around some of those concepts as well.